Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's June 16th, 53 degrees here in Old Town Park City. With us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's Erica Martin. Good morning.
Good morning. I hope everybody's having a great start to your Tuesday. So the story is, we were talking about the past couple of days, cold front diving on down. It's a stationary boundary right now. High pressure system is departing. And now we're tracking the influence of that frontal boundary. Now behind that we have cold air. The good news is now that's going to filter down, so we're going to see slightly cooler temperatures than we have been seeing. Today we're going to see mid 60s, 65 degrees, overnight lows at 40. And then tomorrow, the coldest day of the week, we're going to see 55 as the expected high temperature, overnight low a little bit closer to the freezing mark, 34 degrees. So mostly sunny skies for Wednesday, but for today looks like you will see a couple of scattered showers moving through. Now you have to keep in mind that the relative humidity is still very low, but the atmosphere is still very dry. So it's not like we're going to be heavy downpours, but you will see some isolated showers moving through the forecast region. You may even see a pop-up thunderstorm later today. I'd say about 4, 5, 6, if you were going to get any, simply because of that cold air destabilizing the atmosphere. Just some dynamics there. But cooler on Wednesday. The good news is by Thursday, we're climbing back into the 60s. So 65 is the expected high. Then on Friday, we're going to almost get to 70 there. I'm going to push you to 69, 70 degrees right there. Splitting hairs, it just depends on. Let me look at one quick thing. I just want to get an idea here of the speed of the winds on Friday. That will tell me if you guys might hit 70 there, because we actually want to see northwest 70. No, I'm going to go with the 69 degree day for Friday. And then as we continue to look at the rest of the weekend, we're seeing lots of sunshine in the forecast there. And then we're going to hit 70s by Saturday. 75 is your expected high, 79 on Sunday. And then by next Monday, we're going to keep it in the upper 70s to low 80s. I'm still going to stick with a 79 for both Sunday and Monday. We could see 80s, but right now I'm going with a 79 degree. Just too far out for me to commit to an 80.
Okay, great. Hey, thank you.
Thanks.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Later on, Park City Museum Director talking about the opening of the museum, as well as the loss of longtime research volunteer Hal Compton. Finally, Recycle Utah Director Carolyn Mora with a monthly update about their hours and dumpster days coming up. Stay tuned. It's 8:09. Good morning. Taking a look at some local news now. The Colville Planning Commission last night voted unanimously to recommend a revised version of the Wohali development. The proposal is a scaled-down version of a rural golf course and residential development in the hills west of Interstate 80. As KPCW's Rick Bruff reports, there has been a debate about how an increased number of nightly rental units will fit in this.
The Planning Commission session was held live rather than online at the Legis Center in Colville. About 35 people attended but were required to wear masks and maintain social distancing. The original proposal for Wohali contemplated a rezone with 570 residential units and 130 nightly rentals, alongside a golf course and other recreational amenities. That plan was approved by Colville's council last December, but a citizens group gathered enough signatures for a referendum vote. Wohali developers withdrew that application and therefore nullified the referendum that was headed to the June 30th primary ballot. The revised plan, say the applicants, is a permitted use that can be done on the agriculture zone that applies to Wohali's property. The project on 1,664 acres calls for a reduced number of residential lots to 125. The number of nightly rentals would be increased to 303, but the developers contend those units can be considered part of the permitted use of a golf course. The city requested a legal opinion from David Church, a longtime attorney for the Utah League of Cities and Towns. He told the audience that under the city's code, a recreation use can include a golf course and support facilities. City code doesn't define support facilities or prohibit nightly rentals. About 10 residents spoke at the public hearing. Almost all were skeptical of the project, asking about the inclusion of the nightly rentals, how the project will obtain water, or how it will impact the character of Colville. The Planning Commission vote recommended the project as a permitted use, a master plan development, and a Phase 1 preliminary plat. After the meeting, attorney Polly McLean, representing the group Colville for Responsible Growth, said they were disappointed in the decision.
We feel that the nightly rentals are questionable and that the number is really can explode and really exploit this project. The way that they are defining it, it just is a free-for-all. A nightly rental is a dwelling, and it's a use of a home that allows for rentals nightly. And so to say that all of a sudden you get unfettered number of units to use as nightly rentals doesn't make any sense at all.
One of the critics, Lynn Wood, said that 303 nightly rentals is just too much, and McLean said there are too many questions left. We asked him about the critics, who said nightly rentals shouldn't be on that property.
You know, everybody says that nightly rentals aren't allowed in this zone. Well, they're not allowed in any zone in Colville, and you heard that tonight. But our uses that are allowed, like the lodge that's accessory to the golf course, can be rented as nightly rentals. And so that's the distinction that I think keeps getting forgotten.
He said, well, Howie will be a crown jewel for Colville and fits with the town's general plan.
You know, I almost wonder if the people that put this code together didn't say, look, if somebody has the property that's spectacular enough and the wherewithal to build a golf course on an ag-zoned piece of property, maybe the people that drafted that code actually understood that you need the support facilities to make that viable. Because in the end, it brings all sorts of tax base to the city. And that's what we've been preaching all along. We think the only change to existing Colville City is going to be for the better.
Lynn Wood said she's looking ahead to a city council meeting in the near future, and she said that Attorney Church's opinion is not definitive.
I mean, there's so many legal interpretations. You've heard one tonight, and we can bring in another attorney tomorrow that would give you exactly the opposite opinion. I mean, it happens with judges all the time, legal experts, where things are overturned by an appeals judge. And so we think there's another legal interpretation. We think one that favors our general plan better. But, you know, we do want to see a successful project, and we're looking forward to what the council does.
Colville resident Lynn Wood. For KPCW, I'm Rick Broth.
It's 8:14. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Summit County Council meets tomorrow via Zoom starting at 3:30. On the phone with a preview of the agenda is Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first off, a discussion regarding community programs and roles of the Summit County Sheriff's Office. This is a discussion with Sheriff Martinez and Lieutenant Wright. There's no staff report. I guess we can assume it's a discussion about the sheriff's outreach and relations to the community in light of the nationwide protests.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, certainly the council and the sheriff have been discussing these issues offline. I think they would like to make sure that they have a public discussion, certainly about the sheriff's community policing initiative, which has been in place since he has been the sheriff, and how that relates to the current calls nationally for law enforcement changes.
Yeah. So, I mean, will they specifically talk about policing techniques, how officers respond to a call?
I don't know exactly what the sheriff will address and what questions the council will ask, but I would imagine subjects like that will come up.
And given the news over the weekend about the shooting of Rayshard Brooks in Atlanta, do we know if our officers have some protocol in the event that a suspect grabs an offers, you know, an officer's taser or even firearm and flees the scene?
Well, I don't want to represent the sheriff's office and their policies and procedures because I'm not as familiar with them as the sheriff is. I think we're going to have to rely on the sheriff and Officer Wright to represent those tomorrow.
All right, let's move to the budget report. What do we know about how property taxes, sale tax revenues have been affected? Is it worse, better than we expected?
Well, I mean, property taxes, we don't know yet. What can happen to property taxes is a change in the collection rate towards the end of the year. Of course, we collect property taxes for the previous year at the end of this current calendar year. Normally, we're running somewhere in the 95 to 97% collected by December 31st. Our experience with past recessions shows that we could go down as low somewhere in the 91, 92% collected. But that is collected at the end of the year. We usually collect more of that during the first quarter of the next year. So property taxes won't be that affected. We are seeing values hold and a little bit of new growth. We're expecting somewhere in the $500,000 to $600,000 coming to the county for the county's budget out of new growth from property taxes. So we'll, and as well, because values are holding or actually going up a little bit, we'll see that rate adjust down as well.
And in
sales taxes, we're very naturally seeing, because of the economic effects of the COVID pandemic, we're seeing a varying decrease in sales tax rates. Those sales taxes that support our operations of the county are down around 10% right now. Those that come from restaurant, lodging, other type and support transportation are down significantly higher than that in May.
And too soon to see whether or not we have seen any increase due to reopening?
So we won't know that until we get the numbers for June and for July, which there's about a month lag in getting those. So, you know, in the next quarter report from Matt Levitt, we'll be getting that. And as we start to report on the beginnings of our budget process, we'll be discussing those.
All right. Do you have specific percentages down for the restaurant and lodging kind of sector?
I think in the staff report, we're seeing somewhere in the range of about 31% down, which is second for May. Although May is a fairly low number of traditionally of collecting those types of sales taxes. So it hits our butt, our the things that those are supported, you know, the grant programs, it might hit those less. Certainly, we collect most of those sales taxes during our winter season. So we're going to be keeping an eye on those closely.
All right. Then a discussion about spending money that the county receives under the CARES Act. It sounds like the funding goes to the state of Utah. Some of EdNed goes directly to Salt Lake County and Utah County. Does it bypass Summit County?
It doesn't bypass. It's just that there's a direct allocation to urban areas that are over 500,000 in population, which is Salt Lake and Utah County. So what the legislature has proposed to do in talking to, you know, groups like the Utah Association of Counties and the League of Cities and Towns is distributing similar dollar amounts per person in that population to the other parts of the state. So to cities, there's going to be an allocation to cities and then an allocation to counties.
All right. So Summit County will receive, I mean, upward close to what, $6 million?
Yes, through this source. Of course, there's been other sources of funding that have come in regards to this emergency. For instance, there has been an allocation through the Federal Emergency Management Administration towards health departments specifically, and Summit County's gotten about $1.8 million through that source. And then the community block grants or the CDBG program to help small business. There's been a couple of allocations to Wasatch County and Summit County that the Mountain Lands Association of Governments has distributed. But this source comes directly to the county. The cities in our county will get their own allocation that's separate from this estimated $6 million. It's going to come in three different, what they're calling tranches, one in June, one in August, and then one in October. For Summit County, the first tranche is just under $2 million, and that's one of the discussion items that we're going to talk about with the council tomorrow in our suggested priorities for expending that $2 million. Just overall with the rules, each city and county that gets an allocation has to make sure that these dollars are expended by December 30th. But there's a nuance to that if you haven't identified your spending by the end of November, you've got to turn it back So that it can be redistributed in December to other communities that perhaps have other expenditures that they could use that money for. The state is trying to maximize the expenditure of that allocation.
Right. My guess is there's not going to be any problem spending that.
Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, certainly as you look through our staff report, we're expecting to provide some business relief, or at least that's one of the suggested dollars or allocations out of the county's amount. But there are parts of the state that may get allocated some dollars that they might not have expenditures against because there are pretty strict rules that you can't supplant things that were already budgeted within your annual budget. So for instance, if you had expenditure in your budget and somehow you could make a case that it was COVID related, you can't spend it on that. So you have to follow the rules. Of course, the monies are going to be open to audit by the federal government and the state. So we want to be very clear, and we've studied that to make sure that we're not making any suggestions to the council that wouldn't be appropriate.
So when we talked about, you know, the 30% down in sales tax revenues, I mean, does this $6 million make up for that, or it's totally two different pots of money?
Well, I mean, it's of course, I go back to those rules that it can't supplant expenditures that you were already budgeted to make. But there are some exceptions. So there are, you know, if some of your salary or pay and benefits were directly associated to the emergency, there is an ability to pay for those with this CARES Act money. So there might be a little bit of relief to overall operations budgets in that way. But, you know, we've had a lot of expenses that were not budgeted because of this emergency. For instance, we've had to do a lot of extra cleaning protocols and buy up extra products for our jail in order to keep it safe and keep it from spreading COVID. So those kinds of expenses are what this money is really for.
All right. At about 5 o'clock, a discussion and possible approval of the 2020 tax sale. This is for two or three owners. And interesting, one of the delinquents here is a part-time artist. He says his income dried up because art events everywhere were getting canceled due to COVID. I'm guessing we're going to hear a lot more stories like this.
Well, I mean, we have these, I think it's 11 properties that are on the tax sale for this round in this year. That gentleman's property and one other, I believe, have already been through this and have been given some relief in the past. So I'm sure the council will be taking that into consideration also, whether they've met their obligations from those past payment plans or not. You know, at the end of the day, we're all required to pay our property taxes, and you know, I'm very, you know, I understand that there's circumstances around all of these, but this is one of the more difficult jobs that the council has to weigh in on and make decisions about.
Yeah. Let's see. The council noticing, again, closed meetings pretty much daily. Can you give us an update on the COVID situation?
Well, not daily. We're down to kind of doing Mondays and Wednesdays now. For closed sessions, and we've been doing that for the past couple of weeks, mostly because there's not as much changing every day. We're settling into kind of what the mode of operations is going to be. Case numbers, I mean, I think everybody's following those closely. They're continuing to go up at some high rates throughout the state. Somehow Summit County is avoiding that. And I believe it's because our residents are doing a good job of social distancing and doing the things that they need to do in order to keep themselves safe. Of course, this is all tracked by where your residence is. So our residents and our numbers are not going up as drastically. But at the same time, we're also noticing that as we go out, whether it's just anecdotal or we're actually tracking it, that we're having a lot of visitors to our county, and we're not seeing as much mask use by those visiting. Seeing very good compliance in our businesses and actually doing the right things and promoting very high standards of hygiene. But we would really like to see a lot more mask use, and that's what we're encouraging. We're certainly encouraging it in order to protect your loved ones, to keep our economy open. You know, the stay safe, stay open moniker is what we're going to be following for a long time. And then, of course, you know, we can't ignore the high risk folks in our community. You know, they deserve to get out and resume life as well. And the more that we wear masks and protect other people through that activity, that means those folks can be out doing the things that they need to do too. So we're really encouraging mask use. It is the research is showing is that is the best way that we can protect each other.
All right. Anything else, Tom, you want to mention?
That's all I've got today.
All right. Tom Fisher, Summit County Manager. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:29. Coming up now on 8:30, good morning. Well, the Park City Museum on Main Street has reopened. On the phone with details, I have the museum's executive director, Sandra Morrison. Good morning, Sandra.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you opened last Friday, doing it with timed admissions. How is it going?
Yes, nice and steady. Of course, you know, we wanted to just do something, a soft opening, we're calling it, where, you know, we could just start quietly, safely, and you know, build on our experiences. So right now we're just open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And yeah, we had a lovely weekend and, you know, some visitation to the museum, but everybody, you know, was wearing their masks and socially distancing, and it went very well for us.
So what are the hours then of the museum, so 3 days?
So we're open from 11 to 5.
All right. And how many people then can come in at once?
So we're doing timed admission. So it just, you know, depends on how many people are in the family. Because if you're all together in a group of six, you know, you can certainly come together. And then, you know, at smaller groups of couples, you know, we space them out more so. So it's just a matter of what size groups come as to how many we have.
Yeah, sure. So is it kind of like a one-way route through the museum and gift shop?
Yes, that's what we worked on, and we've got some great signage on the floor. We tried to make it fun, and it says mine, as in, you know, mine car is an ore, mine your distance, and a little picture of an ore car on there.
Yeah. All right. So tickets are then online, or do people need to call?
No. And, you know, most of our visitors, you know, come in off the street. So you can call and make a reservation. But pretty much everybody so far has just walked in, and we've been able to accommodate them. Yeah.
So is this going to come on by? Is this going to change, or do you foresee reopening every day, or is this the plan just to stay open for weekends?
No, I think we'll add additional days as you know, the summer traffic picks up and our, you know, the demand increases. And, so we're just playing it by ear, basically, at this time.
Yeah. What kind of hit have you taken just not being open?
Well, of course, you know, the museum admissions and the museum store is about 20% of our budget. And so being closed for 3 months, it's a fairly significant impact. But, you know, we're moving forward, and the Board of Trustees, of course, you know, is very conservative, and so we did have some cash reserves that, you know, we've been working from. And of course, CARES Act funding came out with a lot of different opportunities for us to apply for. So I think in the last 3 months, I've applied for 16 different grant applications.
So that's what you've been doing while the museum's been closed, filing for...
Yeah, and of course, you know, being a museum and a collecting institution, you know, that doesn't ever stop. So, you know, we've spent our time, obviously, you know, moving forward and continuing to process, you know, the donations of antiques and archives. And then also spent the time doing, you know, really deep cleaning of the museum and the store, and doing a lot of the maintenance that we always need to do after a busy winter season. And then, you know, trying to move our programs so they're more available online. Right now we have three different lectures available on our website that people can watch from the comfort of their homes. And, yeah, we also had we were partnering with the University of Utah and managed to get 5,000 more of our images from the Kendall Webb collection online. They're hosted at the Mountain West Digital Library website, and images of Park City from the 1950s. So, you know, really, you know, that was an era where the economy was very depressed and not very many people living in town. And so they're very interesting, different pictures of Park City. They're not the typical, you know, mining history. And certainly the town looks nothing like it does today.
So anyone's available to go online and have a look at those?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So if you go to our website, parkcity.org, and then that will link you to the Mountain West Digital Library, which is a library of historic images they host from organizations all over Utah and the Intermountain West.
All right. As you were kind of going through your things, did you find any treasures that you may have forgotten about?
We're pretty careful about knowing what we have and where it is at all times. So, yeah, we try not to have too many surprises in what we're doing. Yeah, we like to be very careful, you know, with our collections and our donations, because obviously they're very precious to the town of Park City. One of the other things that we worked on while we were closed was at the Glenwood Cemetery as well, and painted the entire fence. And, of course, last fall we had the preservation company working the historic monuments, and we actually got snowed out and had to leave with the early snowfall that we got. And so as the snow melted, we realized that there was a lot of cleanup of just sort of rubble and dirt and down trees and things like that. So got all that cleaned the cemetery, and we put up temporary markers for all the people that had helped sponsor the stabilization project. So the Glenwood's just looking beautiful right now.
Yeah. So how many have you gotten to?
So we're about 10%. So last fall we worked on the largest, and 66 headstones were stabilized, and there's about 600 in the cemetery. Texas Cemetery Restoration Company are coming back at the beginning of July and will stay another month, thanks to Rob Sledham and Identity Properties, who puts them up in a condominium across the street. And so they will continue on the stabilization efforts.
All right. So
we have lots to do.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you're doing it as you can afford to do it?
Yes, pretty much, yes.
All right. And that's all just based on voluntary contributions, or are you able to
use? So we initially got off to a good start with a grant from Utah State History, and so they were matching donations for the previous project. And then this time around, we're asking people to come help, and we're offering sponsorships at $250 a headstone. And again, you can sign up for that on our website, parkcityhistory.org.
All right. And again, the Glenwood Cemetery is reserved specifically for whom?
So right now, the plots are pretty much all owned by families, descendants of different fraternal organizations that existed in Park City. So those are the ones right now that can be buried there. But there's not too many families left that still own, you know, plots at the cemetery.
Yeah. Certainly some sad news to report. The museum's longtime research historian, Hal Compton, died yesterday. How long did he work with the museum?
So Hal originally was hired to work at the museum by the Chamber of Commerce. We've had a long-time partnership with the Chamber, and that was in 1987. So he started work offering visitor information services and got very interested in Park City's history and, he was retired at the time, so, spent a lot of time researching and became New York City's foremost historian. Hal also loved to hike and ski. So he combined his love of getting outdoors to actually going and finding, all the different historic mining sites and locations. He was out there every weekend looking, for another historic site. And so combining the two together, the experience of physically being at the site along, with understanding the history of what happened there. And of course, the museum's extensive collection of historic photographs, gave him a really good understanding of the interconnection of everything that happened in Park City's history.
Yeah, I used to see him, every morning. He'd walking to work after parking in the parking garage. When did he stop showing up?
So he turned 90 a year ago and moved down to a senior living center in Salt Lake City. He needed more care. Prior to that, he'd been living at the assisted living out in Highland Estates and, of course, riding the Park City mobility bus to the museum every day.
Yeah.
So, he stayed active in Park City's history up until he was 90.
Yeah. So the board of directors renamed the museum's research library for Hal. When was that done?
So when we were building the new museum, we opened that in 2009, and Hal was just a tremendous supporter, not only himself, but as being an ambassador into the community and just explaining and encouraging everybody to support the expansion. And so we've actually named the library Compton History Library when we opened in 2009.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, he was the one that used it the most of everybody.
Any details about a memorial service? I think I read that he will be buried, Glenwood?
No, actually, he always wanted to be buried in the family plot up in Brigham City. He was born in Brigham City, and that's where his parents are buried. And, of course, Hal, never married and always talked about being, buried with his parents in the plot in Brigham City. So that's on Friday, that's that service. And then we're looking at a memorial service at the Glen Cemetery. Anybody that wants... that would be RSVP. So please give me a call at the museum. That's 435-649-457 if you're interested in attending.
And that will also be Friday?
No, that's next Monday, the 22nd.
Okay.
Yeah, we're still working on the details.
Okay. And in terms of, his legacy to Park City, can you talk about what you think that is?
You know, Park City was just a real treasure for this town. He was, in 1998, the mayor honored him as Park City Historic Laureate, which I think describes really well his legacy. He was always the person that, documentary filmmakers went to for the history bite about Park City. He wrote the Way We Were column in the Park Record newspaper, for 30 years. So his stamp on Park City's history is really broad.
Yeah. Also, just wanted to mention that you've got kind of carrying on his tradition, some hikes scheduled for this summer. You're limiting that to like 20 people. People can reserve those online again?
Yeah, we are offering those, for our museum members, because, of course, that's always, everybody loves to get outside, and we go to some pretty interesting places. And a lot of it is, off trail and at high elevation. So we do like to know that, people will be able to keep up with the group. But yeah, again, go online and send us an email if you're interested.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, you know, we have some other programs coming up as well. And again, our website is just, you know, the best place to check in with us and find out what's going on. And yeah, come on by the museum. We'll open again on Friday. And we are for high risk individuals, we will be open from 10 until 11 on Friday morning. So just call us or come on by. And yeah.
Okay. Sandra Morrison, Executive Director of the Park City Museum. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks. Thank you, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:43. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Now on the phone with an update from Recycle Utah, I have Executive Director Carolyn Wara. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
So let's start with your center operations. Are you back to like pre-COVID operations?
We're about as normal as we're going to get. Pre-COVID, we opened every day at 8. Now we're open every day at 10. Otherwise, we're the same. We do only allow 5 cars at a time, and that's been a little bit... I've seen some people waiting, and I feel kind of bad about that. So I'm trying to mitigate that a little bit, but I feel like just to keep enough space for everybody in here, 5 cars is about as comfortable as we're going to feel for a while right now. So 5 cars, if you pull up and you see 5 cars in the lot already, just wait and take your turn. It's kind of when pre-sorting really comes into play a lot. If you can sort your stuff before you come here, you know, put all your different types of plastic together, take all your lids off your plastic. There are a couple of videos on our website about kind of pre-sorting. That can be key. And we do have staff that will, staff and volunteers will help you unload your car. And a little secret around here is if your stuff is sorted in the car, you're probably more like help than if you pull up and everything's all messy and a volunteer doesn't know where to start to help you. So the more sorted, it'll be quicker for you and quicker for us to help you too. So I apologize it's a little inconvenient with having to wait, but we have pretty small staff here and we want to keep everybody, our staff and our guests safe. So kind of what we got to do right now, get by.
Okay. Saturday, the busiest day, so just kind of avoid that, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I can guarantee you're going to wait in line on Saturday. Weekdays, it's kind of hit or miss depending on what time you come. The afternoons tend to not be as busy as right around lunchtime. So.
All right. Will people still be able to get in if you're not there?
Yep. After hours drop-off is still an option. That's after 5:30 at night and before 8 in the morning. You're welcome to use the center then, but just ask to keep the place clean. So there are plenty of options. There are 22 hours a day to recycle. It's just trying to find the best time that works for you and the best time that allows you to get in and out safely.
All right. You've got a composting workshop coming up Wednesday at noon. Are you going to be able to do this safely?
Yep. That's going to be tomorrow. We're going to host it outdoors in the back part of our site here. All the guests will be required to wear face masks, and we are limiting it to about 15 people. So if you are interested in a composting workshop, it's free. It's at noon tomorrow at the center. You can learn how to compost at home, whether you're brand new to composting, been doing it for a while, have some questions, or maybe you don't even want to compost and you want to learn how to, you know, work with one of our local groups like Spoil the Soil and work with them and how to work with them the best. It's a good place to start composting. And if you're not comfortable coming in person, we are going to live stream that online as well. We just ask you still RSVP if you plan to live stream, so we can give you the link and everything like that. You can RSVP to mary@recycleutah.org.
All right. And your annual fundraiser, Uncork, also happening this week.
Yeah, we're doing a little bit different. Unfortunately, it's our 10th annual, so we can't go real big like we normally would to celebrate 10 years of this event. But this was started 10 years ago to help us fund our glass recycling program. It does cost us money to recycle glass. We're not one of those states, you know, that's making $10 on every, I mean, 10 cents on every bottle or anything like that. We do have to pay to get it to the recycler in Salt Lake and pay to get it recycled. So that's what Uncorked is all about. We're going to have some funny signs around our center here kind of celebrating how much glass this town really goes through. And then we'll have some food trucks in our lot. Lucky Ones will be here, Auntie M's, Freshie's Lobster, and Shaka Shake. So we have different food trucks here that you can stop in. Get something to eat to bring with you after you're done doing your recycling. Those food trucks will be here Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday this week during lunch hour.
Okay, 10 to 2, it sounds like.
Yep, 10 to 2. So when you're done recycling, stop to a pie for Father's Day from Auntie M's or lunch from Shaka Shake or Freshies. Lots of options here. And Lucky Ones, they just opened back up in the library this week, so kind of exciting to help them kind of get started again with what's normal for them and the new normal right now.
All right. And you've got another Dumpster Days coming up.
Yep, and this will be our last Dumpster Days for the spring. We do Dumpster Days 2 weekends in the spring and 2 weekends in the fall. And this is our last spring weekend. It'll be next weekend on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from 9 to 4. We do have 2 dumpsters outside. One is for large household waste. Kind of think of it as like a broken wood picnic table, something that wouldn't fit in your curbside bin. And then one for yard waste, general yard clippings, maybe trim some trees or grass. And just we don't allow anything hazardous, and it's for residents only. And this went really well. We hosted this at the end of May. It went really well. We felt like the social distancing safe, and it was a good opportunity. A lot of people have a little extra time at home to clean out, and a good opportunity to get rid of some stuff.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Did you see a lot more stuff than usual at last month's dumpster days as people had time to kind of clean out their spaces?
Yeah, a lot more greenway trash, which is means a lot of people have been in their yards and stuff, so pretty exciting to see that. And we haul that to Wild Harvest Farms where it's composted. It's a good way to get rid of that kind of thing. So a lot of green waste, and I kind of expect the same thing again right now. Not as much trash. I'm not sure if that happened, you know, but way back in March when people were really eager to clean out the closet and get rid of stuff. But
okay. And you're asking for donations?
Yeah, we do pay. We pay to host this event. We do it in partnership with Park City, but we do pay to host the event. So if you're going to bring us stuff, bring a few extra bucks to drop us a buck and help us keep it going.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, everybody's been great in this town. Keep your masks on. Stay safe. You know, we're pretty lucky that the recycling center, our work is done outside, and outside tends to be a little bit safer than not. But we do ask just everybody safe between our staff, our volunteers, to wear a mask when you come here and keep doing what we're doing, Park City.
Okay. Carolyn, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you. Bye.
Carolyn Warr is the executive director of Recycle Utah. KPCW News Time now 8:50. 55 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Again, looking for a bit cooler temperatures with a chance of a scattered, isolated shower. Looking for highs today into the mid-60s and overnight low of about 40. Looking for some sunshine tomorrow, high of 55. Could be the coldest day of the week, though, because overnight lows dropping down to about 34. By Thursday, back into the mid-60s, upper 60s for Friday, into the mid-70s for Saturday. The nationwide protests against police brutality and the death of young black men have refocused the attention on the issue of how to improve and reform police departments. Summit County Sheriff Martinez tells us that he has thought about that even before the current controversies. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more about that.
Sheriff Martinez said his job is to think constantly about how to improve his department and make it more community-centric, but he said with funding already tight for the sheriff's office, he doesn't agree with the calls to defund the police.
But to reduce the budget that's already been reduced quite a bit and to have the less deputies out there, absolutely, I just don't think we could do that. We run on a shoestring budget as it is. We run on a shoestring staff. And a lot of the programs that I've implemented, we took the Justice Reinvestment Initiative and turned that into the drug court. We turned it into county probation. The working inmate permit saves the county money. These are good for the community. These are good for those that are coming into my correctional facility. I want to see recidivism just drop off.
He said with fewer deputies, his department would have to be more of a reactive force, and he doesn't think the community wants that. Asked about the diversity of the local force, he notes that he himself is Latino. The department includes a Vietnamese officer. His latest hire was an African-American, and two recent promotions were for female officers. He also made a couple of recent hires of county residents. We asked if his written policies explicitly reject racism. The sheriff said he can't put his finger on a specific provision.
I would have to make an assumption that it is in there somewhere because it's a national policy that we've purchased and that race biases is addressed in there, but I can't give you a specific line of where it's at.
He added, however, that he doesn't tolerate racial profiling, quotas, or racist behavior in his office. The sheriff said he's also changed some of the practice in the department.
When the previous sheriff, a good friend of mine, he used to basically just pick and choose his next supervisors, next sergeants, next lieutenants. I've changed that. I've changed it to the point where I don't even have anybody in my office involved in that process because I believe there's too much biases involved. Hey, you know what? You didn't give the best presentation, but you're my buddy. We go out drinking together. I'm going to give you a better score. I take all that out of the process and turn it over to my sheriff's advisory board and outside personnel to really guide the process for a supervisor.
He added that county council members are involved in the last stage of the interview process. He said he started events like Coffee with a Cop and keeps in touch with organizations such as the Park City Community Foundation.
I sit on the Peace House Board. I sit on the Children's Justice Center Board, Summit County Domestic Violence, and I try to hear what they hear from their clients when they come into the Peace House, what their needs are. We've done everything. All of our literature is in English and in Spanish. I have taken my deputies from a hard uniform to a soft uniform. I've been on your show, and I think you've seen me. I've been basically in a golf shirt and an embroidered badge. I want to take away that fear. I want to take away that hard presence and soften it and let people know we're approachable.
He said he wants his officers to be a positive presence in neighborhoods.
One, I demand that they stay off the highs and 224, 248. That's not what we should be patrolling. We should be in the neighborhoods. And my mandate is that when you're in the neighborhoods and you see kids out with a lemonade stand, I expect you to stop and talk with them. I expect you to get out and go into the businesses. I really want to make sure that the community knows that we're not just driving around, that we're approachable, and we are here to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Well, Park City had its first car-free Sunday on Main Street June 14th. KPCW's Sean Higgins was on the ground for us and has this report.
It was definitely not business as usual on Park City's Main Street on Sunday, with no cars, people in face masks, and social distancing measures in place. Hundreds of people roamed the street throughout the day while groups of bikers maneuvered between them. With the city council voting last month to close Main Street to traffic on Sundays for the summer, local businesses and restaurants took to the street. The measures allowed for better social distancing opportunities for customers who were perhaps a little wary of heading inside during the COVID-19 pandemic. Around 15 businesses in total registered to participate this week, ranging from retail stores to bars and restaurants to art galleries. Kevin Valaika is with Main Street Shabu Restaurant and says he thinks the event will only grow bigger as the summer goes on and word gets out.
This is the first one, and I think it'll gain momentum as we keep doing it. The first time you run anything, you can't really have super high expectations. I think the word will spread.
The Historic Park City Alliance's Allison Kulo said on KPCW's Mountain Money that many participating businesses met or in some cases even surpassed their retail numbers from the same weekend last year. If those trends continue throughout the summer, Kulo says the event will prove to be a success. Bob and Megan Flannery are Park City locals and came out with their dog Murphy for a lunch in the sunshine. They say the event made things almost feel normal given everything that has happened over the past few months. Says he feels like it's his responsibility to support local businesses in these tough times.
If we want all these great businesses, we got to come out. So that's why we came out today. We're going to find a nice place for lunch. We're going to make sure we leave a great tip for all the hardworking service folks that work here. And if we want that as part of our city, we want to support it. It's up to us. And I feel that responsibility. Plus, it's fun.
Local businesses weren't the only ones taking advantage of the increased foot traffic on Main Street. Incoming Park City High School sophomore Oliver Diazmore has been playing the cello for almost 6 years. He and his older sister Zoe took the opportunity to serenade Main Street and collect donations. Someday, Oliver hopes to attend the National Cello Institute and says car-free Sundays give him a great chance to play for new people.
Oh, it's just a great opportunity. I love doing it. It's a great chance to practice, and I get to play for all these people.
If you have a business in the Main Street Business Improvement District and would like to participate this coming Sunday, you will have to notify the city no later than Thursday. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
And the public is invited to learn more about the plans for the property formerly the Park City Tech Park at Kimball Junction. The property owner, Dakota Pacific, has a new website and one more online open house scheduled for this afternoon. That online open house is scheduled from 2 to 3:30. The property owner's representative, Jeff Gochnauer, says that Dakota Pacific is a real estate investment firm. It is also has a development arm. It purchased the property back in 2018.
We've done development in the area before and had always had our eye on the Park City Tech Center because we knew it had been entitled in 2008, but it seemed like it had struggled getting any traction with the research park concept. So we had been in conversation with the Boyer Company over those years to say if they ever had any interest in selling it or doing something else, we'd be interested in talking to them. And that's sort of how it all came into play.
He says Dakota Pacific intends to be the developer and long-term owner of the property with no plans to flip it if they do get the entitlements that they're proposing approved. In 2008, the Tech Park was approved for 1.4 million square feet of development and 150 residential units. Today, they're proposing a 122,000 square foot hotel, about 255,000 square feet of commercial, retail, and office space, as well as 1,100 residential units. 306 of these units will be deed restricted. Given the timing of the Tech Park approval back in 2008 at the start of the recession, Gochnauer says it was difficult to get anything going there. Since then, other places in the Salt Lake Valley have been developed as Tech Parks, bypassing this location. He says the project would provide needed housing and get people out of their cars if they can live where they work.
The challenge that Kimball Junction has is that most of the people that work in Kimball Junction or even Park City commuting up from the valley. And we've been told that between 60 and 70% of workers are commuting. And that in part is what creates a challenge in that area. And so by providing housing, both workforce housing and market housing, we think it'll give the opportunity for these people that are commuting up from the valley to live. If they live in this, the residential component of our project, we're right at the transit center. I don't know why they would ever, and they work in Park City, I don't know why they would ever dive in. They just hop on the electric bus and commute. So we feel that there's a benefit to housing because it'll help take cars off the road. And it satisfies one of the objectives of the county to provide housing, in particular workforce housing.
The link to today's Zoom session is posted online at heykimbelljunction.com.